This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Yeah, there it is. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Tuesday night, yes, I was somewhere stuck in the, what you said, the northern lights there, Johnny. I was watching.
Electromagnetic storm.
I was up there, you know, with my son watching them. And at a moment, I was like, where am I? And the next thing you know, I was teleported or whatever you want to say into another dimension. As you were saying, we need our friend Dr. Ethan Siegel to explain my adventure with the northern lights and being teleported to a new place. All I know is that I missed last night and I'm so sorry. Thank you, my friend.
Well, I was hoping you had gone back in time and undid A Nation at Risk, and you know, then we would never have had No Child Left Behind and this pre-Act 10 stuff. No vouchers, no charters. You know, Tim was time traveling, trying to fix education. But alas, Tim, you're here. We still have an attack on public schools, you know, a democracy on life support. But, you know, there is always a ray of sunshine, you know, in this. And I'll tell you what, man, I'm glad to have you back. Glad to have you on here and be chopping it up with my favorite dude. And be talking about education with you here on Busted Pencils.
Yeah, well, you know, too, best thing, well, not the best thing, but one of the greatest things, Busted Pencils sponsored the Menard Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its parasitic voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer and t-shirts and all kinds of cool stuff, man. But Johnny, you know, I was thinking about coming into the show, and you know, typically it's on Tuesdays, if we don't have a guest, we do the, you know, what's trending in education
news.
Well, I gotta, you know, what's trending are things that are stuck in my head that I can't get rid of. And just thinking about this, and I put it out there on social media, you know, I'm thinking maybe we need this time a new segment. Every so often we'll try it, but I was thinking about something called Let's Get Real. Okay. Let's get real. Well, and I hope
I'm real all the time. So
I know, but I want to bring some truth, some introspection, some light, some just a little bit more than what we typically do. So let's get real.
I'm gonna call this Tim Say What?
Tim Say What? Let's get real. Science of reading. We've had Matt Damon's mom on, Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, Paul Thomas, even Diane Ravitch. We've talked about it, but man, the amount of press I see this getting, particularly at the state level and certain states in particular, too, adopting full court, you know, saying we are going head first into science of reading. And with that, high quality instructional materials, we'll come back to that. But the science of reading, I was like, Johnny, let's get real. We have done it with Paul Thomas, with Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, with Diane Ravitch. But let's get real on this idea of the science of reading and high quality instructional materials. What is it that's happening? And I'm going to put it out there from what I'm seeing here. I'm concerned. I'm concerned about the fact that what's being put forth on there, and it's kind of duped. We're duping families. We're duping children. We're duping teachers into doing that thing that we said, you know, teachers, we don't have a, quote, Hippocratic oath, but the whole idea of do no harm is something that permeates the profession. And you talk about a teacher and say, man, whatever it is, I just want to make sure I'm not doing harm. And the reality is, John, you pointed out since No Child Left Behind, that was it on steroids, but since A Nation at Risk, doing harm has almost been required by politicians, policymakers, advocates of schools are stinky, schools are failing, kids can't read, kids can't do math, all of those things. And what we're going to do to fix that is we're going to come in and take over and make you teachers do what we said. And typically what we said, most teachers, most professionals would say, that's harm. I don't know what to do. The teacher exodus that we find ourselves in now 40 years later after A Nation at Risk, direct result of, again, telling teachers, look, we know you said you don't want to do no harm. However, we know better. We're going to inflict on you. And in fact, we want you to carry out and do harm. We want you to, during the No Child Left Behind era, we want you to focus more on meaningless test scores than on realities such as poverty, equity, diversity, and inclusion. No, we need better test scores. Teachers, when kids are really digging deep into things, if it's not measured on a test, ignore it. Stay away from it. Hey, music, art, recess, take those things away. Those are extra. Most kids don't need that. Johnny, that was harm. And I talked to teachers at that time. And what I'm hearing from the science of reading and high quality instructional materials, and in fact, I'd like to hear from you, 855-752-4842 out there, is that we're again going to be asking, and in fact, in some states, and I know one state in particular, mine, Ohio, and actually in other states too, we are going to demand again that teachers actually engage in, what do you want to say, a form of teaching where there just isn't any good research to say we should be doing this. And in fact, we now have a militant approach in some states to saying that the science of reading is what will be taught. And with that, there are certain curriculum that only can be used. And if you're a teacher education institution, if you are preparing teachers who are going to go out and teach literacy and teach reading, if you don't have a teacher education program that is fully immersed in, quote, the science of reading, you're not going to be allowed to license teachers anymore. You're going to take this away. And Johnny, I'm saying, let's get real. That's what I'm putting out there is going, I want to have some real conversation about this because I'm worried that, again, what's going to happen is that in 3 to 4 years from now, we're going to go, what the heck was that? Why did we do that? There were people back then, 3, 4, 5 years ago, Thomas, you know, Paul Thomas, Nancy Carlson Page, Tim and Johnny, Busted Pencils out there going, let's get real. Why would we do this? But let's try to, can we put a stop to it now? Can we slow it down? Can we ask at this moment, are we supposed to be engaging in this type of behavior, this practice, mandating from on high, from the politicians, through a curriculum process that teachers had no ability to be a part of, to take a part in? Parents and students, again, having to be the recipients of this policy. And then when it goes south, the reality is going to be all of the politicians and the policymakers and the high-quality instructional material curriculum providers who have flooded millions of dollars into greasing the palms of these politicians to mandate policies that will continue to harm children, they'll be gone. And again, they'll be moving on to the next problem. I just want to say, Johnny Lupinacci, can we get real, man?
I mean, I'm really sitting here listening. It's it couldn't be more real for everyone out there in classrooms, for teachers right now, especially in this season change we're in, you know, weeks out till the break, whether you have summer break or whether you're just on a short break. It couldn't be more real for learners out there, for young people in these classrooms who are like, are we for real? We're going to try and pack more in these last 3 weeks, right? So it couldn't be more real for the people of the world who don't have access to quality education. So I think things are real. I hear you, Tim, and I'm going to say yes to all this stuff, but I'm also going to say I got good news for you, man. Mm-mm. Because I'm going to say, most of us teachers and most of us day in and day out salt of the earth, blue collar scholars, blue collar educators, you know, the people in the trenches. We're like science are eating same beep, different day. Okay. Same beep, different day. This is not new. You're going to just cook up some stuff. It's like if I'm going to, you know, call dinner, and I'm going to say, hey, we're going to make dinner. But I'm just going to throw a bunch of stuff, everything possibly in my refrigerator into the pot, stir it up and be like, guess what? This is now dinner. Every night we're just going to pour everything we know. This is, to me, science of reading. Everything we know about how kids learn, phonics, vocabulary, you know, sight words, all these things. We just got to pack it all into one thing and say, you got to do it. And you got to do it this way because this is how we know kids learn to read. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, here I'm going to say, Tim, great concern, alarming kind of stuff, dangerous. I love Paul Thomas's take on it. I read it. I love, you know, the discussion that we were having with Diane Ravitch. I love, I love Dr. Nancy Carlson Page. I like how she reminds us, like, hey, young learners are not only important, but they learn really differently. And don't freak out if they're not achieving necessarily on these benchmarks, because these benchmarks are set to measure something other than what we would consider holistic growth. But hey, I'm here. I'm going to represent on the floor, the factory floor, right? Same beep, different day. Yeah. You're just trying to pour it all into one pot and force feed us educators on the front lines. And really, the buffer for this is like, this is you know, meeting lingo. This is accountability stuff for school leaders. This is stuff that teachers were kind of like annoyed and sit through patiently because we know the work we're really here to do is work with young people. But I like, Tim, that we're chopping up because, you know what? This kind of crap, I can say that instead of my beep out, same beep, different day, has influenced how we can do our jobs. And I think that's what you referred to in that sort of idea of like, hey, I get it. If teachers, we take this oath to do no harm. You know, none of us come to teaching to say, man, I don't really want to mess up lives for kids, you know, but yet too often what is called good teaching or is force fed to us as good teaching is actually harmful. You know what? We want you to give us a call. So listener out there, if you're feeling this like same beep, different day, welcome to Busted Pencils. Chop it up with us. Call us 855-752-4842. We'll hear from you when we get back. For far too long, these voices muffled by distances. It's time to come to our senses. Our robots are beginning.
What we are, Busted Pencils, a big media machine. Wow. Fully leaded education talk.
The machine.
Educated educators talking education. Let's get real. Trying it out. New segment. 855-752-4842. Science of reading, the mandate, high quality instructional materials that are going along with this. From on top mandate to say to teachers, look, here's the reality. We've got a reading proficiency problem. I'm going to use that language. You know, 1/3 of the kids aren't proficient at reading. Well, after 100+ years of teaching reading, finally the science has discovered the truth, and the truth shall set you ablaze. Not free on this one, because but the reality here is, Johnny, is that's what, you know, and I know you're kind of like same old da 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 da. One more thing, I'm kind of like going, I don't know, because I got to think about this now from the standpoint. I see this in higher education. Maybe I'll take the higher education frame at this point and say, I'm a faculty member, and one of the things I absolutely love, I guard with everything, is, quote, academic freedom, the ability for me to not teach people whatever the heck I want.
But not anything goes.
No, not anything goes, but to engage in discussions around what the research says is clear, what the research says is not clear, and to not politically be manipulated into saying something that is, quote, not true. And we saw that really happening with, critical race theory and the attack on history and narratives of history that might not conform to a happy-go-lucky time. But, I was sitting there going, okay, like, sorry, I have academic freedom when it comes to teaching the truth of history. I'm sorry, politician, you don't get to come in and mandate to me what it is I'm going to teach. You're going to push me. You're going to maybe try to freeze me out a little bit, try to chill me. But you don't get to do it because I have academic freedom, because the truth is on my side. Well, on the science of reading, I got to say, and if you are a reading faculty, literacy faculty, even putting this out there to, the people, the Lucy Calkins of the world. In fact, she follows the show, Johnny on Busted Pencils. Yeah. Lucy out there, she's taking a lot of heat now for. The idea of balanced reading. And it's just like, okay, wait a minute, what is this all about? And if I'm a faculty member who did my research, got my tenure, got promoted, became full professor on publishing research on children and how they acquire literacy, and you're going to now tell me that I'm not allowed to teach what I know is true?
Tim, I mean, I'm going to say in some cases, academic freedom doesn't necessarily mean what, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but there's dimensions to this. And it's sort of like when we talk about free speech, it's a similar discussion. Mm. We talk about academic freedom and free speech, and academic freedom is really important, not only to university faculty and professors. It's absolutely important there because of what I'm going to come back to, Tim, when I say yes to what you said, but not totally yes, from my sort of reading of what academic freedom is, right? But I'm gonna come back to this. It's also important for our public school teachers. And it also exists as a dimension of freedom of speech and a responsibility, mm-hmm. right? As a public educator, as a teacher, like you said, to take a Hippocratic oath as a medical practitioner or anyone in the healthcare, work. Teaching is care work. It's political care work. It's an investment in our future democracies, our local economies. But it's also, teachers also, unofficially take this oath to do no harm and to apply to the best of their knowledge, right? What you kind of call, what you're calling is truth, or I'll kind of call it a base of scientific evidence. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll come back to science of readings, because science of reading is a marketing slogan. It absolutely is not necessarily sound science in terms of it's not following this peer review process. That the scientific method and the scientific community, diverse scholars around the world, not even scholars, but different takes on researchers, conducting experiments to say, hey, what are the ways that children learn to read? And I talk to literacy faculty all the time. They're really frustrated around this right now because there is a political pressure for there to be a one size fits all that we can monetize in the form of these curriculum materials you're talking about. So there's a corporate interest in having there be one best way, and I'm going to name it, patent it, and get it, legislatively mandated everywhere so that guess what? People have to buy my materials. So absolutely. Tim, I get you on that. It is infringement, not only on academic freedom, but on the, freedom of speech and the important responsibility that teachers are taking to best meet the diverse needs of their students. Now, if I'm on the marketing team, and yes, I'm not talking about research, I'm talking about marketing here. If I'm on the marketing team for the science of reading, I'm going to be saying things like, guess what? The science of reading fixes everything. It's sort of like snake oil for fixing schools right now.
There you go. Thank you.
Guess what? Tim, you and Johnny want to grow some hair? Well, just apply science of reading. Hey, you guys, kids are hungry in schools. You know what? They won't be hungry if they get science of reading. Science of reading feeds you. You're like, hold on, how does it? No, it doesn't.
It's this
one size fits all buy my product push. And it's absolutely maddening for our researchers in literacy who know that children learn to read in different ways. Now, there are some competing right? Paul Thomas came on and he, you know, he really gave us a good layout of this, but you know, there are some competing ways children learn to read. And, you know, it, you might have to use a little bit of variety in your class. For a little while, it was called differentiating instruction, you know, or we might UDL, universally designed learning. It's almost like a verb now, UDL, the lesson
UDL, man.
For diverse learners. But I'll come back to this, you know, and I think it's a hot kind of conversation for us to carry into the next segment. But academic freedom, right? Academic freedom for a listener out there thinking about, you know, freedom of speech. It doesn't mean you can say whatever. Academic freedom doesn't mean I can just teach whatever, right? Or I can declare truth on things, which is kind of what science of reading is doing. But academic freedom for faculty members, as you brought up, Tim, consists of four elements.
Okay.
Teaching, right? Which is the freedom to discuss all relevant matters in the classroom. In terms of if it's important, like science of reading, we should be teaching about it because it's relevant. And maybe, you know, talking about that it's not scientifically sound is a conflict of interest to our state legislators who have, you know, gotten into bed with the corporation that's promoting science of reading. Well, you know, it's our freedom as researchers and teachers to teach that. It's also to research, freedom to explore all avenues of scholarship, research, and creative expression, and to publish the results of those work. It is our duty to kind of poke holes at things, but sometimes we're wrong. We're going to come back to this, Tim. When we come back, we're going to talk about intramural speech and extramural speech, because this is the weeds, the gray area around freedom of speech and academic freedom. And I'm with you, though. Science of reading. Womp, 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 womp.
Let's get right, real.
Say us, what?
Let's get real. 855-752-4842. There it is. Dancing shoes are on, ready to go. Busted pencils, fully leaded. Education talk, educated. Educators talking education. 855-752-4842. Yeah, check it out. You know, you're either out there on the Civic Media app taking us in. You're on the Civic Media Facebook page looking and watching. And you're on X, Twitter, X, whatever it's called. You're watching us. You're on the YouTube. There are so many different ways.
Are you catching us on your favorite, however you get your podcast?
However you do it. You get your podcast on, you know, but more than anything, making sure that you got that Civic Media app. Go to Civic Media. Go to the webpage. Click on Busted Pencils. Download every episode that we've ever put out there. Put it together. Send it to your legislator, send it to your neighbor so that they can learn a little bit, so they can get educated on what's happening. We're doing a little bit of let's get real science of reading. Johnny Lupinacci, I kind of put before the, you know, before we came back here, was kind of lamenting the fact that, hey, we are now telling colleges, we are now telling college faculty what they can and cannot teach. When I say we are, not we, politicians have now declared truth, and they have found a single truth, and they are now mandating that single truth be taught, and that only that truth be taught. I say, sorry, academic freedom. Johnny Lupinacci, you were helping us out trying to understand.
And believe me, I don't want to give benevolence to our legislators and politicians, but they are kind of middle management on corporate interests on this.
True.
Okay. So that's another thing. It's like, come on, get a backbone, you know, and lean on scientific consensus rather than something called science of reading. Mm. I mean, it is like, it's not real science. There are elements and strands of scientific studies pulled together to create a product, right? To create a marketing slogan and a product to kind of push, hey, let's adopt this in states, let's require it, and let's license things, and let's use it as a way to impose governance, right, which is anti-democratic, to impose governance on something that is historically and ought to be a stalwart of democracy, local control.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And this ought to resonate to, okay, you know, I'm wearing my blue shirt here. You know, it's no secret. I'm a lifelong Democrat who's unhappy with the Democrats right now. But I'll tell you what, Republicans have been guilty of this for a really long time, too. But the idea here being is like, you're not representing the best interest of educators, of teachers, of school leaders, being able to do what's best for different kinds of learners. You're trying to impose a one size fit all in a scripted curriculum on the teachers that are saying oftentimes, hey, I'm not sure this is all good. But right. Really, what most teachers are saying is like, okay, here we go again. This is the next thing. And they're going to keep doing, you know, the kinds of things that they know work for different kinds of children learning to teach or learning to
read.
But also for us, teaching teachers who are learning to teach, we do not want any teacher going out there only knowing one way to teach young people to read. That's absolutely bad teaching for them to do and for us to do in preparing them to teach. So you're talking about that governance, and I think it's really important, especially here on civic media. We're connecting at all time to democracy.
There we go.
Right? And you brought up academic freedom, which is, you know, another key point. We say in a democracy, everyone has a voice and that voice is valued, right? And that doesn't mean that you get your way, because there's the also that all decisions are made in the interest of common good. But so when we talk about academic freedom, it's kind of like an extension of freedom of speech. And we talked about before the break, teaching freedom. So you have freedom to teach about this. I think it's really important to say, Tim, the teaching that science of reading isn't exactly scientific method. It's not right? Scientific consensus. Scientific consensus, to break it into like an example for our listener out there, let's use something really kind of politically debated right now that draws on non-science scientific consensus for an argument. Climate change.
There you go.
You know that scientific consensus says there's something really going on in our environment, and it's human, you know, exacerbated by but there is some changes that are going to be really imminent, if not already imminent, and there's scientific consensus on this, right? The IPCC report, there's all kinds of like diverse scientists around the world doing from different disciplines all kinds of experimental collection of data and saying, guess what? There is this thing called climate change, right? It's very real. You said, let's get real. It's real.
Let's get However, real.
There are opposing perspectives. We talk about them as false equivalencies in terms of there is a part of the scientific community, a small portion, that says, what if climate change is not real, right? And they're conducting research to sort of disprove the existence of climate change. Wait, this is really important. Even though I'm like, hold on, don't give equal time or merit or consideration to these small, so far unsuccessful attempts to discredit the existence of climate change. So scientific consensus being the key point, that a majority, not even like a close majority, we're not talking about like 51%, we're talking about 99.something%, are landing on through the scientific method, which is, you know, repeating the experiment over and over again in different places.
Got to be sure.
Yeah. So, you know, in saying, well, there's that other 0.006% that are saying the whole thing is not real. And actually, I want to advocate that there is academic freedom for those researchers to do that.
Yes, there is.
This, my friend, is how we debunked the science of racism in terms of historically science had said, hey, guess what? Science, there's these particular people from the Caucasus Mountains, and you know, they are superior to all other human beings on the planet. They happen to be white. We'll call white people Caucasian. Guess what? This is science-backed white supremacy. And for a while, science was used to say that particular colored skin of people, like white folks, are superior. Same kind of science has been used to say men are far superior to women. Now, those dissenting studies, and I'll credit like academic freedom, although I want to really say more courage from civil rights people like women in science and people around the world who have said, hold on,
hold on,
actually not true. Let's run the tests. Let's
get real.
Yeah, and scientific consensus gave us the Human Genome Project, gave us all kinds of scientific evidence that, guess what? Those kinds of inequalities are truly socially constructed. They are not natural. They are in the interest of some at the expense of others, and there's no science to back racism. It exists culturally, but it doesn't exist in our genes. There is no superior human being, whether it's understood as gender, whether it's understood as identified sex at birth. These kinds of things have been debunked by science. So academic freedom is really important. So I want to say, like, we got to have both. And even when we disagree with it, there should be space for it. But what we do as decision makers, so coming back to that legislative governance that Tim, you're saying is, and I agree with you, threatening academic freedom, is saying, they're saying, we want to take that false equivalency and we want to purport it and enforce it, right? So we want to take, it would be the same as a legislator saying, well, there's studies out there that climate change isn't real, and I want us to stop trying to figure out alternate ways of, you know, of having energy in our communities, of, you know, responding to climate change, right? That is the similar kind of thing happening here with science of reading. Yeah. And I agree with you. You know, we need to protect academic freedom as an extension of freedom of speech, because we have intramural speech and extramural speech. And academic freedom, you have the freedom from institutional censorship or discipline when speaking or writing as participants in the governance of an educational institution. So this is really important for a lot of issues, not only in science or in like how we learn to read, but also in how we learn to be in community together. This is a hot topic on college campuses across the country right now.
Sure it is.
In response to the conflict, right? Teaching about Palestine right now to being censored and say, hey, you can't say that. Hey, you can't do this. You can't teach about that. That goes against academic freedom in a lot of ways too. We also, in academic freedom, when we're talking about it, have a thing called extramural speech, which is freedom from institutional censorship or discipline when speaking or writing as citizens. So not only do you have an institutional responsibility, Tim, to be saying science of reading isn't actually science, folks. This is not scientific consensus. This is at best a big pot of everything in your refrigerator being served as a gourmet meal. And in fact, not only served, imposed. You must eat this.
You must.
You may have an allergy or a political or religious reading meaning for not eating what's in this pot, but too bad, because this is what you're going to eat. That's the same thing in terms of how we teach reading. It's being imposed. So not only do you have an infringement on your intramural speech as a faculty member of an institution that's supposed to be providing scientific consensus as the basis for what they're teaching, but you have a civic duty, right? Extramural speech. You know better, and you have a duty and a responsibility to speak up. Everyone has a voice. That voice is valued. This is a democracy. So you have double duty, Tim. So I get why you're frustrated and you're saying, let's get real. And I'm teasing you when I say what?
Well, like, come on now. Intramural, extramural. The last time, intramurals, I was on an intramural softball team. I remember when I was playing, you're not talking about, I know it's putting this forward though. And again, you know, if you're the listener, you heard a lot from Johnny there about this whole idea of quote academic freedom, and really making sure what Johnny's doing is making sure, you know, we got to get it right, because, you know, just because one side gets it wrong doesn't mean then we can also get it wrong to quote combat that. So we got to be able to get that right. And yeah, when it comes to the science of reading though, here, Johnny, I want to bring it back to now though, to a parent who's about to send their child to kindergarten, to first grade, to second grade, and they're going to back to school night next August, right? Or they're hearing about the future reading curriculum that will be used the fall next academic year. And here's what you need to do this summer to get ready, because that's the other thing. We want to make sure the kids are doing what they're supposed to do in the summer, so they're not losing, you know, summer learning loss. We're going to get them ready and we're going to get them moving. And we're telling parents and teachers parents and their children that here's what you have to do to get ready to be in compliance, to be with the science of reading next year. And guess what? There are kids, and Johnny, you said this, and this is a little bit different, because in the quote, it's not a false equivalency, but if there are three out of 17 students who don't need phonics to read. And in fact, if we impose a phonics curriculum on them, it will stifle and in fact limit their ability to learn to read better, that is imposing harm on them. And that's where I'm coming back to saying, whoa, let's get real on the science of reading and recognize what we're doing is that my neighbor is going to take their child to school next year and possibly be told by teachers, and teachers are sitting there going like, why do I have to do this again? As you were saying, here we go again. But the reality is,
I mean, you and me are both old enough to remember a thing called the reading wars.
Well, there we go.
Do you learn? Yeah, this was a thing. I know.
Anya's like, what? The reading wars? Are you kidding me?
I don't. I don't think I was there for the drafting of the reading wars. No.
Yeah. No. There was really a thing, and it's reemerged. It's again, you know, history is not repeating itself, but it's rhyming an awful lot. Right.
Oh yeah, deep. Okay. Rhyme.
But you know, what was it, like late 80s ish, and then into the early 90s, and it's coming back around. The reading wars. Is it phonics or is it whole language? And now we're like, again, in this particular moment we are in education, we're revisiting. It's like reading wars part, you know, the saga continues part 8 on this. Like, let's replay the same old thing. 2 points on that, Tim. Again, same beep, different day, right? Also, it's a major distraction and it's a way to impose control. And I want to come back to like you saying that. It is a major distraction to things that are out high need in the classroom, ways that schools are failing children and communities and the teachers working in them. And instead of fixing those, we put blame on the students and blame on the teachers by saying, oh, guess what? You're not following what we're telling you need to follow, right? Mm-hmm. The science of readings. So it's like reading wars continued, right? So let's get into that a little bit when we come back. Chop it up. Callers, give us a call. Join the conversation. Busted pencils when we come back.
Yeah, it's the only thing that matters. Anybody catching us live on Facebook or on X or on YouTube, you saw us back there. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. The number 855-752-4842. Let's get real. Tuesday, science of reading, high quality instructional materials. Didn't even get there, but the reality is that the HQ, high quality, I am instructional materials are part of the science of reading, because we're finding out in certain states that there is only one curriculum that can be used to teach the science of reading. The only thing that you're allowed to teach is the science of reading. And Johnny, what I was saying during the break, the problem is, and you said, you know, 80s, the whole language wars or the reading wars with whole language and phonics. The wars are the result of, and this is where, you know, maybe we find, quote, the common ground people out there, is when we advocate only is the enemy in this discussion. Only the science of reading is a problem. Only whole language is a problem. Only. Because there isn't, when it comes to learning and children and how learning occurs, it depends on so many variables. So many variables. But I'm going to bring up Paul Thomas's always to remind us, though. But man, if you're only focused on teaching methodologies at the expense of those other variables, such as, Johnny, the foods that children are eating and whether they're eating any food, the reality of shelter and the shelter that they live in. And if we're not dealing with that, the chance that they feel safe, those realities. In fact, when we only teach the science of reading, what we're only doing then is that we're saying, we are not allowed to talk about the effects of poverty and how poverty can absolutely dismantle learning and the situation and what happens to kids. And then it takes the heat off of politicians. They don't have to now deal with the fact that the poverty that is out there was not caused by people who are in poverty. The poverty is caused by government, by politicians who impose a state of constant need and not allowing those needs. Okay, poverty is the problem. So I'm coming back to this and going, man, Johnny, this is the harm, because it takes us away from solving the reality, the real issues dealing that that our kids, that our communities, that our neighbors are dealing with, which is, if we care about learning, then we have to create the conditions that foster learning. And the conditions that foster learning might be the science of reading and phonics. It might be whole language. It might be really great picture books. It might be really good informational text. It might be, but none of those things matter when kids come to school hungry, when kids come to school sick without health care, when kids come to school without shelter. None of those things matter, because those are the things that matter. And we only deal with, when we deal with onlys, we are absolutely cutting off the conversation about what really matters. And we're talking about, let's get real. Let's get real. The science of is actually a distraction for politicians to say, I'm not going to do my job. I'm not going to take care of poverty. I'm not going to create the conditions of a thriving society. I'm not going to do it. Teachers, it's your fault. It's your fault. And if you don't get those kids out of poverty by reading better, well, then it's your fault. And that's where, sorry, I'm going to get real here and go, that's harmful, not just harmful to individual kids. That's harmful to our democracy. I'm coming at it from that point, Johnny Lupinacci.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, man. And it's so, it's interesting just to trace history a little bit and you say, hey, we brought up the reading wars, like the phonics versus whole language. Then we had the era of the 90s and the 2000s of balanced literacy, right? Which is sort of like the ceasefire on the reading wars. Right. Do kind of a combination of both. And people are, educators are like, oh, phew, good. Cause that's kind of how I was working. Because after about 10 years or so of doing, you know, doing away with whole language and just doing phonics, we're seeing a whole bunch of people didn't learn to read. Mm-hmm. And so let's do a sort of balanced thing. And to me, science of reading is, you know, an extension of that balanced ceasefire, but being weaponized, like you said, as you know, a way to blame teachers, to blame schools, and to not look at the responsibility that schools have. You know, Tim, and these kinds of discussions, well, we have them here at Busted Pencils all the time, every day. At the same time, you can catch it on Civic Media, get the app, you know, download the episodes, however you listen to your podcasts or live radio, catch us on there. But you can also go to the Minocqua Brewing Company, have a great conversation with your friends, or make some new friends, because Busted Pencils is sponsored by the Minocqua Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its parasitic voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. And Tim, I had a Schoolhouse Bock.
Yep. Nice.
That's one of their brews, the Schoolhouse Bock. And, you know, when you're, you know, hoisting them up with your friends and talking about education, you're also supporting efforts to defend public education. And so what a double down on things and exercising your civic duty, right? To have these conversations with friends, to make allies, right? Yes. In this, to say, hey, whether you're not, maybe you're a teacher, maybe you're not a teacher, maybe you're a parent, maybe you're not a parent, you're just part of your community. Education matters, right? And it matters in real ways. Tim, you're reminding us tonight, you're saying, let's get real. It couldn't be more real. I'm going to float it out there as well. You know, this science of reading stuff, I think it's important to talk about. But again, it's like coming at us in these really authoritarian ways. And that's a huge problem. Not only is it a problem because it's not exactly correct, it's not exactly a one-to-one with what we know is best instruction, right? It's being weaponized as sort of a way to put in a capsule and force down the throats of teachers a scripted curriculum that, guess what, your district needs to purchase because of scores that students in your districts have on their standardized tests. So we're going to be coming back to that often on this show. But Tim,
I want to preview tomorrow. We've been talking about the season change right now and how hard it is for teachers and the big, great work that teachers are out there doing despite conditions, the working conditions in their classrooms and the hard work that young learners are putting in everywhere despite those conditions. And so we're going to have our favorite teachers, educators, Hallie and Joanna on from Educators Amplified, talking about teacher well-being in this season change. Tim, it's good to see you tonight. Love having you back on the show. I'll miss you, my guy. When we come back, join us tomorrow.